We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello everyone, I'm Ben Johnson and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello everyone, I'm here with International Master-elect 14-year-old David Brodsky, fresh off of earning his third norm. Congratulations, David.
Okay, thank you.
So why don't you tell your listeners a little bit about your recent norm and about introduce yourself to the chess-loving audience that is listening.
Yeah, so I'm David Brodsky. As Ben mentioned, I'm 14 years old, going to be 15 in August, and I just got my last IM norm at the Philadelphia Open, which was over Easter. I made it with two rounds to spare, actually. I had half a point extra. Had I won my last game with black against the GM, I would have gotten the 2400 VDA rating and a GM norm, but that didn't happen. And so once everything gets rated, my VDA rating will be 2380, so that's 20 points away from 2400, which is the last thing I need for the IM norm. For the IM title. And of course all the paperwork has to go through, but yeah.
Right. But from what I've heard, it's a bit of a hassle, but basically a formality, right?
Yeah, I mean, FIDE has to accept the norms, and from the other two where I got my norms, people applied with those successfully, so there shouldn't be a reason why they throw out mine from those two.
Okay, yeah, and I read your articles on Chess Summit. You've been, in addition to playing, you're a really good chess writer, and you've been sort of chronicling your ascent, so I recommend that people check it out for some background, but... And you've already written about your most recent success. How frequently do you play, David? How frequently do you go to tournaments?
How frequently do I play? I mean, it depends, but usually it's like two tournaments per month, maybe, plus minus. I mean, it depends. Like during the summer, it's more, but Yeah, about two tournaments a month.
Okay. And where do you live?
Westchester County, New York. So that's maybe about an... It's north of the New York City, so...
So are about, you... Or do you go into the city to play?
Yeah, I go into the city to play. Yeah, it's about an hour's drive.
Okay. So you're not playing Thursday night action, I guess. Yeah. But you, but if a good weekend tournament comes up, you're able to make the trip?
Yeah. Yeah, I would just commute back and forth and... Yeah.
Okay, and how did you get into chess?
How did I get into chess? Well, when I was... Well, my mom used to play when she was a kid, but she doesn't do that. She doesn't play anymore, and she wanted me to learn, so she bought a computer game, Fritz and Chester, for my brother. So, of course, I caught on, who's my younger brother. And, yeah, that essentially taught me the rules and some of the other things, and I liked it. And then and then I think it was start of the school year 2009, I started doing lessons, played my first tournament in start of 2010 when I was seven, and I mean, it was a scholastic tournament, and there are a bunch of kids tied with 4-0, myself included, and somehow my tie breaks were the best, and I got the first place trophy. So.
Nice. So how old were you at your first tournament?
I was seven.
Okay. And look at you now. So this is, what, 7 years later, and you're rated 2450, which is number three for 14-year-olds in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's number three. I mean, now with the recent Philadelphia Open now put me at 2480. That's I think it's number two behind a Wonder Leong.
Okay.
14-year-olds.
Fast company.
Yeah.
And are your rivalries with the other promising young chess players? Are you on pretty good terms with them? I know you guys must cross paths a lot.
Yeah. No. I'm in good terms with pretty much all of them. So.
Yeah, I've stopped by one or two chess schools. I don't know if you were there, but you know, Greg Shahadi runs the U.S. chess schools, and I know that you've been to a couple. So, and it seems like the atmosphere is very, very supportive. It's nice to see that the kids aren't at each other's throats too much.
Yeah, of course.
So you play two times a month. What about your study regimen? How do you improve at chess so rapidly?
How do I improve at chess so rapidly? Well, I mean, I do a lot of things. You know, how much I do depends on what day it is. You know, how much time I have, plus minus. And yeah, so one thing I like to do is tactics on chesstempo.com. It's on internet, and also there are the books. I mean, the books I like best are generally these days they're the Agard books. Also, the new series he has with Gelfand is very good. So,
yeah, those everyone speaks highly of them, and I saw that you quoted them in your article, the three questions. Do you mind telling our listeners?
Okay. Yeah, those positional play. Yeah. And also the new series with Gelfand is different. Gelfand writes it, and Agard's essentially the guy who prods Gelfand, like, why did you come up with this move and that kind of stuff. So.
Okay, and were there any other formative books? Because those books you're recommending, and not so much recommending as saying that you've benefited from, but some of our listeners, they may be a little bit advanced for. Do you have anything that was particularly memorable for you in helping your improvement when you were a little bit lower rated?
Yeah, let's see. I mean, one book that I read, I think when I was around 1800, it's an old book, but still pretty good. It's Endgame Strategy by Shereshevsky. And it's a pretty nice book. It goes through like the end games, like do not hurry, you know, principle of two weaknesses, bishop pair, etc. All those things, usually from the older games. So,
okay. And I know that you've talked about. So you're doing tactics and you're reading books. How much time do you spend on each one? Like, and who designs your study regimen?
I mean, I sort of design it myself, but when it comes to how much time I spend on them, well, I do prefer with these books just sort of shorter sessions instead of just you know, instead of doing like, you know, just half hour sessions, maybe 45 minutes and then take a break and then maybe do a little more, maybe a different book and all that. So.
Okay. And do you have the chess set out when you do these?
Yeah, I do it. I do it with chess set on the board.
Okay, good. So, good. Very dedicated.
Oh, well, yeah.
And you're the second young talent. You know, I've had been privileged to have a lot of strong players as guests on this podcast, but Christopher, you and yourself are the younger generation. Obviously, you're a few years older than he is. But yeah. I did want to dig into a little bit about how much you use and don't use technology when you study, because, you know, for someone who's older like me, it's just shocking to look through the top 100 list, because kids like yourself are just so much higher rated than they were when even I was growing up, let alone people even older than me. So in your development, not just now, but in your ascent over the past 7 years, what percentage of your time would you say is spent studying with a computer versus studying with books?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, with the computer, that's mainly openings and stuff. And the tactics, yes, those are online, which make up a sizable proportion of my time. But yeah, but with books, I usually just don't use the computer when I read the books. Occasionally, maybe if I'm interested, I read something in the book, and then maybe I take a look at it on the computer if it's an opening or some end game or whatever. But yeah, with the percentage, I don't know. Would I make it maybe 50-50 maybe, or okay, a little less?
It's funny because that doesn't sound that much different than what people have done historically. But for some reason, I mean, maybe it's just that there's more information out there. But do you have any guesses as to why people are improving so much? Kids in particular are improving so much more quickly than they used to?
Yeah, I think maybe it's probably just because the information is a lot easier to find with the internet. Openings, that's a lot easier to do these days with the computer and databases and engines, but rather than back in the old days. And also with the internet, it's a lot easier to do things there, like take lessons on the internet and stuff like that.
Yeah, speaking of which, I know you mentioned that you give some lessons on the internet.
I take lessons.
Oh, you take lessons. Do you mind saying who you work with?
Yeah, Yarmolinsky, Alex Yarmolinsky.
Ah, former podcast guest, Yarmolinsky.
Yeah, I saw that.
He is quite a character. He was very entertaining. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah.
How is he as a coach? Like, is he tough love or supportive?
I'd say more supportive in general.
And what sort of materials? Like, I'm sure he reviews your games. What else does he do with you?
I mean, it's either some openings or end games. That's what he often does. End games, in general. That's one of his specialities.
Right.
He's well known for that. And
how long have you been working with him?
Oh, it's been, well, I need to check the calendar. I think we sort of started working towards the end of 2013, maybe? Like,
okay.
It was like December 2013 when we started working together.
And how often do you do lessons? And
twice a week.
For how long is each lesson?
Hour and a half.
Okay, so that's a lot of work already.
Yeah.
And how did you hook up with him?
No, it was my old coach who was sort of it was sort of breaking up with him, and he suggested, okay, do it with Yarmolinsky. And it was sort of, it used to be that I'd have two coaches, but really it was breaking up.
And I know, David, that you are homeschooled, so do you think that gives you extra time to study chess?
Well, it does give me some extra time and flexibility around tournaments, because it makes it easier to go places. I can do more schoolwork before or after the tournament, and also just makes it easier for stuff like Friday evening rounds and that kind of stuff. Just not having to worry about that. But
and I don't know if you're able to, how privy you are to what went into your parents' decision for you to be homeschooled. But do you think that chess was a factor in?
Oh no, it actually wasn't a factor. I was homeschooled since first grade when I didn't know what chess was.
Okay.
So yeah.
Do you think that in addition to giving you more flexibility with tournaments, do you think it gives you more time during the day to study?
Yes, I think it does. I can just take some time in the middle of the day and then do the schoolwork after to study chess. It's rather than go to school, come back, do all the homework and have some time in the evening for chess. That's
so it cuts off on the transportation time. Do you think that you also just have more hours in the day? Like, who works with you for your curriculum at home?
Oh, my home. I mean, it's either my parents, but I'm also taking this year. I'm taking some classes online for the APs and stuff, and also one college class. Just that's what homeschoolers often do. Just a college class one per semester. That's it. And
okay. And if you were in school, you would be a freshman or a sophomore?
Freshman.
Okay. And do you think of yourself as a freshman being homeschooled, or is it not really how you think of it?
No, I do think of myself as a freshman when I'm homeschooled. So
okay. And yeah. And do you? I realize it's sort of your only frame of reference, so this might be a tough question for you to answer. But do you like the schedule that you have?
I do. Yes, I do. I mean, now it's gotten a little busier now that I am high school technically, and I have to do more stuff. And the college class that makes it a little—it's not much effort, but it does make my schedule a little less flexible and all that.
Okay. And you mentioned you had a brother. Is he also home with you?
Yes, he's 2 years younger than me, and yes, he's also homeschooled. So,
does he play chess?
He does, but he doesn't play it so seriously. I mean, he really just goes up and down a lot. Like, I think when he was 1600, and I think he was 6 or 7, and now he's 1700. So, I mean, he was at 1600, then he dropped to his floor, went up, dropped to his floor, 1400, and now he doesn't really study much. And and yeah, he's sort of interested in other things like math and
foreign okay. But with you traveling so much, does he often go with you?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, he often does go with me. Like he went to Philadelphia with me. I mean, and also because my dad works, and sometimes he has to go to Long Island for business, and just can't leave my brother at home the entire day.
So. Right. Okay. And your dad, I saw in one of the articles you wrote for Chess Summit, you were sort of tweaking your dad a little bit, his chess playing abilities. So apologies to Mr. Brodsky. But is he a tournament player?
No, he isn't. He's just Pat. I wouldn't say Patser, but he's a beginner.
Okay. So he's just picked it up as a way to follow your progress?
Yeah, I mean, I think he knew the rules before, but he never played really.
Okay. I mentioned briefly before, but I'm really a big fan of your chess writing. I can tell you're putting a ton of time into your posts. I mean, they're great explanations of each position, as well as going into the sort of psychology or the struggle of trying to get better as a chess player. So what has shaped your writing? Do you think it's other chess books, or do you like to read outside of chess?
I don't know. Probably it is other chess books and also just my personal experience. Like, okay, when I write articles, I don't want to just copy the stuff in the textbooks and just do that. I mean, I want some personal games that were sort of important to me and for the articles, especially when it's instructional stuff. So.
Okay, and how long does an article typically take you to write?
It really depends what it is and how much it is. Like some of the articles take a lot longer than others, especially the tournament recaps. Like the one I did on the amateur team East, I don't know if you
saw
that. That was maybe 5 hours maybe.
Okay. But, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all. I might have even guessed higher based on the how much detail you go into and how well presented it is.
Yeah.
And do you write this is sort of a silly technical question, but do you, to make the chess diagrams, do you use Microsoft Word or what?
No, I just take a open in chess base and take a screenshot and then crop it.
That's my trick as well, but I really feel like there should be a better way to do it.
Yeah, me too. But okay, there aren't so many diagrams, so I just do it the manual way, and there's no problems with that.
And you know, you're a pretty young man, only 14 years old, and you've accomplished great things in chess. Do you get nervous when you play? Can you take us through the emotions of trying to improve in chess and putting so much work into it at your age?
I do sometimes get nervous, you know, particularly before the tournament, like before the first round pairings. Oh no, what happens if I play this guy and he does this? But yeah, there's not so much stress. Besides when it gets into like the norms and the norm possibilities and winning the tournament or something like that. That's when it gets stressful, like the last couple rounds in Philadelphia, especially my last round. But
so do you feel like the nerves subside when you're playing, or do you feel it like before the game and during the game?
I think it sort of subsides during the game, unless the position gets out of my comfort zone with the wildness.
Yeah, like, you've got some fun games.
Yeah, some of them are fun. Like my game with Paragua at the Philadelphia Open, that was a fun one.
So during the games, like most recently, we'll talk, I'm sure you've played for like, you know, state and national titles and stuff like that too, but let's just start with the most recent. So in these tournaments where you're playing for your third norm, and you know, if you say, I don't remember the exact scenario, but if you say you needed to win to get the norm or something like that, like how often during a game is the fact that you need to win for the norm crossing your mind?
Oh, well, actually, in the last round game with Rafeng Li, that was crossing my mind quite a lot until it was clear I was just worse and had no chances of winning the game.
Right. Okay, but as I recall, you had a couple games where you said you sort of wrote it off mentally, like your position didn't look good, and it was like a similar scenario, but that actually enabled you to claw your way back into a game.
Yeah. I mean, those games, it was sort of, I knew I'd still have a pretty good chance even if I lost the game, and I wouldn't be happy, but I still have a good shot. For a norm.
Okay. And what would you consider the highlight of your chess playing experience so far?
The highlight of my chess playing experience so far? Probably it was the Washington Chess Congress in October last year when I got my GM norm. That was probably the highlight. But yeah, the Philadelphia Open is also one of the highlights. And
yeah, you beat 3 grandmasters in a row, correct?
Yeah, I beat 3 grandmasters in a row. That was sort of unexpected, but because I drew my first round with white against a 2250 or plus minus. So, and it was one of those games, okay, I know that this position is just real great for me and probably I should win it, but of course I messed it up and really, it was actually probably a little worse at some moments, but yeah. Then when I beat Paragua, that was a very fun game, very tense, and it came out on top. And then, okay, I'm like, next round I get black against the top seed, Shimonov. I didn't really have anything to lose going into that game, and I somehow won it. And then the fifth round was another long one, and we were or somehow won it. And yeah, that was pretty motivating.
Okay, so I have to tell my listeners, I mean, David, you know, you guys, I'm sure listeners, you guys can appreciate that this is a very young, talented, improving chess player, but his articles do an amazing job of really taking you through the experience. So I feel like it might be harder for you to talk about than to write about, because when you see the diagrams and see the swings, it's kind of surprising because, yes, you know, you and your opponents are such strong players, but it seems like the evaluation in the game is like teetering back and forth in a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you get the impression that that happens in your games more than other people of your strength?
I'm not sure. I mean, some of my games do get a little more chaotic than they should in general, but some of my games do look pretty neat, but I would say that, yeah, my play sometimes isn't the most solid.
Okay. And is how would you describe your chess playing style generally?
In general, well, I just play. It depends on when my opponent does. Like, okay, if we get a mess like in the game with Paragua, I mean, I'll play it. And okay, if we get something technical like against Berchess, I'll play that too. I'll just play anything.
And how much, I know that you meant, so you work with Grandmaster Yermolinsky. Are you, yes, also studying your games on your own? It seems like you're doing a lot of reflecting on each game that you play.
Yeah, I do look at the games and make some notes, analysis, and then Yermolinsky tells me what he thinks about them in general, and we look at some things, and yeah, I do look at my games a lot. Just, even if it's just a confused jumble of notes, it's better than nothing.
And if you go to a tournament and you have extra like free time, what do you like to do there?
What do I like to do? Well, it depends. Like sometimes I just do nothing and read the chess gossip and all that.
Where do you read the chess gossip?
Oh, well, it depends. It's either Chessbase or chess.com or where else? I mean, also chess24 and all these.
So you're basically following the tournaments. I mean, yeah, okay, there's only so much gossip. I know there's some, yeah, but it doesn't come out every, yeah, day in our world.
Yeah, true, true.
Okay, so you're not seeing the sights much when you go to a given city. Like you were recently in Charlotte, right?
Yeah, I was in Charlotte.
And was that a game a day?
No, it was two games a day.
Okay, so they're keeping you busy.
Yeah, but there's enough time between the rounds, so I you know, prep for my morning. I'd take a look at the gossip, prep for my morning game, and come back, eat, prep, play, sleep. That's
okay.
Essentially.
And do you have to deal with schoolwork while you're there?
Sometimes yes. I just do something in between the rounds on the computer or something. But usually I clear. I get things done before the tournament, just to make my life easier during the tournament.
Okay. And do you have, is there one parent in particular who usually chaperones you?
No, it's usually my parents. It's usually my mom who takes me to the tournaments and in general. I mean, sometimes it's my dad, but usually, especially if it's like over the weekdays or something, he works. So it's my mom who usually takes me.
Okay. And I don't think we're going to answer the nature versus nurture and solve what exactly correlates with chess ability here on the Perpetual Chess Podcast. But I am always curious about the backgrounds of the parents, particularly of young talents like yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about your parents?
Oh, about my parents? Okay. Yeah, so they're both from the Czech Republic, used to be Czechoslovakia, they met in college and at the math faculty and math computer science faculty, and was in Prague, I think, and Then my dad came here to get his PhD at UMD. And
okay, his what was his PhD in?
Computer vision.
Okay, and what's UMD?
University of Maryland.
Okay.
Actually. So it was down there, and he got a job here, and been in this area for. This is where I've grown up.
Okay. Yeah, it does seem that there's a connection between chess enthusiasm and computer programming.
Computer programming and math, and this math. I mean, usually I meet. It's very funny that I meet the chess people at the math and math people at the chess.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that is sort of funny. Like, just these random, just these math competitions. You just start counting the chess players, you know.
That's funny. That's so funny. You're going to math competitions as well?
I mean, sometimes. Like, I mean, my brother is more into math these days than I am. But yeah, I mean, I go to, there's a nice math circle nearby, and I go there. They sometimes do tryouts for competitions, okay, if I get in, I go. So.
And is there any sort of rating system for math?
Not really. There's no real rating system. It's usually the scores in the competitions that.
Okay, and what about ranking?
Nothing like that. Okay. Really.
Do you think that's? Do you miss that? Like, do you like the fact that chess is so easily quantified?
Well, I mean, it's sort of nice that you can get with the ratings, you can easily. Get a, you know, someone's, how good someone is relatively speaking. And well, in math, okay, it depends on the competitions, like how you usually how much you scored on this competition and that competition and
how,
all that.
How are they structured, the math competitions?
How are they structured? Well, okay, the big ones, there's these math competitions, AMC 10 and 12. It's for kids under 10th grade and under 12th grade, respectively. And then from those competitions, they take the top 2.5% and go to another level. Amy, I made it there this year. And then they take like the top plus minus 200 kids and make it to US AMO or JMO, and then the top kids from that go get to the summer camp, and then they, from the summer camp, they select the kids that go to the International Math Olympiad. But so that, and then there are some other competitions like some of the colleges do math competitions for high schoolers, like the HMMT, which is at Harvard and MIT. I went there last year, and that's where I met all the chess players. So.
Funny. So yeah. Is it like a written test? Once you show up?
Yeah, it's written. The competitions are usually written. And the answers, it depends. Like for the AMCs, they have a multiple choice, so it's like five choices per question. And then for some of the others, like for the AMI, they have like, they give you, your answer has to be between 0 and 999 inclusive or something. So that minimizes the guessing. And for some of the others, you just write it in. You just write the answer.
Okay. And we won't hold it against you, but if you say math, but do you have a preference between chess and math?
Chess.
Okay, good answer.
Yeah, it's a good answer.
And do you think much about, do you have a goal in chess?
A goal in chess? Well, GM title is it's been the goal for a while, but...
Might need to adjust that goal in another year or two.
Yeah.
If you get there.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
And you've already got one norm, right?
Yeah, I have one GM norm.
And then you would need your FIDE rating to hit 2,500, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I need two more norms in my FIDE to hit 2,500.
Okay,
that should take a while, but it's, now that I'm an IM, I've made it a nice section of the way.
Okay, and before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about the K factor, meaning how much a rating fluctuates at a given rating. I think that's something that some of our listeners might not be aware of. So do you mind explaining how the scale changes as your rating goes up?
No. So with the USTF ratings, it's sort of simpler that as your rating goes up, your K factor drops, which meaning that the ratings are less volatile as you go higher. And then I think that above 2400 USCF, the K factor stays at 15. But with FIDE ratings, it's...
So does that mean if you beat someone your rating, you would gain 15 points? Or
No. If I beat someone my rating, I gain half a K factor.
Okay.
So because they take the difference between your expected score and your actual score, and they multiply it by the K factor.
Okay.
So I'd gain 7.5.
Okay. And in FIDE?
Now, in FIDE, it's a lot... It's different. The way it used to work is you'd have K factor 30 for your first, I think, maybe 20, 30 games. I don't remember the exact number. And then your K factor would change to 15. And when you cross 2400, your K factor would become 10. But then I think it was sometime in the summer of 2014, they changed it so that below 2400, the K factor is 20. Above 2400, the K factor stays at 10. But for kids under the age of 18, the K factor would become 40, which is pretty high compared to like 15. And if the kid crosses 2300, then the K factor becomes 20. So I was really surprised. Like, what are they doing? K factor 40? Are they just? It's crazy. And there have been cases where some kid goes from 2100 to 2500 in a couple months, thanks to the K factor.
Right. Well, I imagine that the problem they're trying to address is like here in the United States. A lot of the tournaments are not FIDE rated. So I know that in the Pro Chess League, there was basically an arbitrage where if you could find the kids who had high USCF ratings, but their FIDE rating had not caught up with it, then you would basically have a competitive advantage. Like I know Christopher Yu and the guy on St. Louis, whose name is escaping me, the fourth board. Yeah. I think they had lower FIDE ratings. So do you have any ideas of how else they might handle that, or do you just think there should be more FIDE tournaments in the U.S.?
Well, I'd probably say that there should be more FIDE tournaments in the U.S. just in general. I mean, there are FIDE tournaments, like the big ones and some of the smaller ones, but there are like FIDE tournaments at the Marshall once in a while, but. But yeah, I think in general there's still a lot of tournaments which are USCF rated, but not FIDE rated. And I think there should be more FIDE tournaments in general. But yeah, I don't think K40 is the solution to the problem. I mean, a little higher K factor, okay, that's fine. But 40 is just too volatile.
Yeah, it does. From what you've said, I agree with you, although I wasn't aware of the issue until you brought it up, but it's an interesting problem.
Yeah. I mean, with me and the K factor, okay, I did boom up to 2300-something FIDE in late 2014, early 2015. So I was like 2300 USCF and about the same on FIDE, so I was a bit overrated. And then with K20, I dropped and stayed around 2250. Then I dropped a little lower, went back up, and but now I'm back over 2300 with some of my recent successes. No, now I'm 2380, but yeah, I spent a lot of time below 2300 for quite a while.
Yeah, I know you mentioned in your articles that you've had a lot of swings in your rating and your performance.
Yeah, agreed.
Is that something that you're working to improve, or you just consider that sort of comes with the territory of getting better overall?
Yeah, I mean, there's gonna have to be some volatilities here and there. I mean, as I'm going up, I mean, everybody has bad tournaments once in a while, but yeah, definitely I should try to stabilize my play somewhat, just not to be going up and down, especially if I want to get those 20 points to 2400. It's no good if I drop and then go up and drop again and you go up.
Well, it might get you the title.
It might get me my title. Yeah, I could get 2400 unofficially, and
you wouldn't be the first.
No, I wouldn't be the first, nor the last.
Right, exactly. So, do you feel sharper at times? Like, can you feel it when you sit down? Like, oh, I just don't have it today? Or is it more like you just play some bad move and then you know that you didn't have it that day?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, sometimes I do sort of feel like, okay, I'm tired, I have a headache, I have a whatever, and it may not be my day, but also sometimes after some pretty bad games, I'm like, what am I thinking today? Like, I'm not thinking.
So, I mean, I think a lot of chess players might experience this. Do you have days where you have to force yourself to calculate?
Not really. I mean,
okay. So it's not that you're not calculating, you're just missing things.
Yeah, I'm just missing things.
Okay. So you're 14 years old, a few more years before college. Do you have a plan for if you definitely want to go to college?
No, I mean, yeah, I'm going to go to college, but which college is the question? And at this point, I really have no idea.
Well, I should hope not.
I mean, there are plenty of options available for me. And
are you thinking, I know that they offer, you're probably going to receive some chess scholarship offers if you haven't already. Is that something you might consider?
Yes, that's something I will consider.
Like, okay.
If I want to do that. But.
And would you do that? Is it primarily, do you think, if you were to take that, would it be a financial decision, chess decision, combination, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know. It'd probably be a combination of the two. But really, at this point, I don't know what I'm gonna do with the college. I mean, the amount of colleges that are offering the chess scholarships, that number is growing these days, and maybe something will pop up by the time I go to college.
Okay, and any idea what you would like to study?
Probably something math or computer science, so something like that. Something in that territory.
And you know, if I were 14, I would have no idea what the answer to these questions are, so I'm sorry if this gets tiresome, but this will be my last career plan type question. But do you think about being a chess professional?
That's a tricky one. I mean, it depends where I it really that thing depends where I am, like, at the point. I mean, I can just, you know, I mean, okay, I can just, you know, I don't know, honestly.
Okay. I'll come. One of the reasons I like to get you young talents on is that one of you someday is going to be world champion, and then you'll feel compelled to come back on because you are already a guest. So
okay.
I'll have you back on in about 6 years, and we can discuss it then.
Okay.
So what else do you do, David? We mentioned that you don't have much downtime when you go to tournaments, but what are your interests outside of chess and math, just day-to-day life?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I do things like, okay, I do a little karate and also just, we have a few things, like I have a basketball hoop outside and a little ping pong. I have a ping pong table in the basement. It's not the greatest table, but yeah. But it's good enough, and also just normal life.
Do you get along? I guess you and your brother must be spending a lot of time together if you're homeschooled together. Do you guys get along pretty well?
In general, yes. And we also have friends who are homeschooled and have similar interests.
Other chess players?
Not really. I mean, a couple have played chess, but, you know, maybe they made it to, like, 1300, but they don't play these days.
So you're talking about local friends, not...
Local friends, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, David, I think we've covered most of the topics I wanted to talk about. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I don't think so. There's nothing that comes to mind.
Okay. And again, I recommend people read your stuff on Chess Summit, which has a lot of great writers writing about sort of their chess experience. And if people want to comment, I mean, to reach you, should they just leave a comment there, or is there another way?
They can just leave a comment in one of my articles, and I'll find it. It'll just send me an email, and that's it.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks. Well, David, I wish you a lot of luck in the future. I don't really think you need my well wishes, but just in case they make a difference, I'll give them to you.
Thank you.
And thanks again for coming on. What's last question? Very last question. What's your next tournament?
Oh, my next tournament. I think it's going to be the Maryland Open in 2 weeks, in 2 weekends.
Okay. Is it norm? Is it a norm tournament?
No, it's just 5 rounds.
Okay.
But still, time gain some FIDE points, hopefully, or just don't lose.
Right. Yeah, that's a good goal.
Yeah.
First, do no harm.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, David. Good luck with everything, and we'll be watching your progress.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for having me on this podcast.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.